During the interval, composer and producer and grandson of Sergei Prokofiev, Gabriel Prokofiev, presents a personal view of some of the many and varied arrangements of pictures at an exhibition by Mussorgsky.
My first experience of pictures at an exhibition was hearing it as a radio jingle on Radio Liberty, which was a Russian language station operating from Germany during the Cold War. My father used to listen to their transmissions and even ended up making some programs on contemporary music for them. I recall they used an electronic version of the theme, The Promenade, on the hour before the news. I remember as a child hearing my dad listening to it on a crackly shortwave radio. It was only later on that I found out where the piece was from, and I think a lot of people know that melody without realising where it comes from. And that's one of many examples of the global popularity of Mussorgsky's great work, which can claim to be one of the most arranged pieces of classical music, though it's probably in the world of popular music that the most different versions can be claimed, by songs such as Yesterday by the Beatles, or even George Gershwin's Summertime, which has about 2,600 recorded versions. I was approached by the BBC to talk about pictures at an exhibition, partly because of my own interest in a modern version of arranging called remixing. I run a classical record label, and with each contemporary classical work we release, we have a series of different remixes of that work from different composers and producers. So I've got a personal passion about what happens when different artists and composers look at somebody else's work and try and do something new with it. Pictures at an exhibition, with its legacy of extremely varied arrangements, could be called the godfather of the remix. There are at least 100 different versions of Mussorgsky's work, which he wrote as a suite for solo piano in 1874. There are arrangements for accordions, bassoons, brass, clarinets, solo double bass, guitar, handbells, harpsichord, jazz band, marimba, organ, percussion, 44 grand pianos and one prepared piano, rock bands, saxophones, 1970s analogue synthesizer, woodwind and xylophone. And of course, there are many arrangements for orchestra, including Ravel's incredibly popular version, which we're going to be hearing in the second half of tonight's prom. The first question is, why has Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition attracted so many different arrangements? What is it that makes it appeal to so many people? Is there something about the piece itself which draws people in to try and do it with new instrumentation, with different textures and sounds? Pictures certainly shows the best of Mussorgsky's skills as a musical dramatist. His incredible instinct for descriptive melody and harmony, with subtle chromatic and folk-inspired inflections, is in full flow in Pictures, which was composed in only 20 days. As Mussorgsky wrote, Pictures is seething within me. I can hardly scribble it down on paper fast enough. This fire of inspiration can be felt in every picture and is key to the attraction of the work. It's very tempting for any arranger or composer to expand on Mussorgsky's fantastic, though demandingly awkward to play, piano original, so that these very powerful images he's created can flourish even more, whether with small chamber group or full orchestra. A very good example are the chords at the beginning of the Catacombs. Played fantastically there by Alfred Brendel, but when performed by a full orchestra with the lungs of maybe 12 or 15 brass players pushing through those chords, and the weight of at least 8 double basses, there's an extra kind of energy that cannot be denied, which brings a monolithic quality and gravity to the piece. When you hear that, you have to wonder why Mussorgsky didn't orchestrate the music himself. You can hear in the piano version its orchestral potential. It's worth noting that he wasn't a conservatoire-trained orchestrator, and he only completed 8 orchestral works, and actually wrote 4 different versions of St. John's Night on a Bare Mountain, which eventually was reorchestrated by Rimsky-Korsakov to become the very successful Night on a Bear Mountain that we know today. In his famous discussions with Robert Kraft, Stravinsky recollected a general opinion in Russia that Mussorgsky had a big talent but poor musicianship. But Stravinsky also praised his intuition as a composer. It was left to other composers and arrangers such as Ravel, whose version we just heard then, to take the work to the orchestra. Mussorgsky's work describes the composer himself walking around an exhibition of etchings, paintings and drawings by his close friend, the architect and designer Victor Hartmann, who died in 1873, only 5 years after Mussorgsky had first met him. In 1874, Mussorgsky attended an exhibition of 400 of Hartmann's works in St. Petersburg, and inspired by what he had seen, he wrote a whole suite of 12 piano pieces, each one illustrating one of the pictures from the exhibition. The suite is held together by the enigmatic recurring theme of the promenade, which is supposed to illustrate Mussorgsky himself stomping around this exhibition. The promenade theme occurs 5 times, but always different, whether in key, tempo, or register, so we become very familiar with it, but we never tire of it. In fact, it seems to have taken on a life of its own, from its use in the Japanese manga cartoon Tenrankai no Ii, to the curious adventures of the Smurfs, to the built-in self-test of the early 8-bit Atari computer, and on call waiting systems on phones throughout the world. One of the attractions for the arranger is that it isn't quite a folk melody, but it couldn't quite be called a typical European classical melody either. Also, it's incredibly unusual to have such a popular theme that is actually made up of irregular phrase lengths of 11 beats. That's the promenade performed there by Ashkenazi, illustrating Mussorgsky's uneven but determined gait as he walks towards the first picture. However, Stokowski, in his arrangement, tries to clean up this irregular phrase by simplifying it into shorter units. But interestingly, he kills some of the push and drive that the theme normally has. The idiosyncratic and iconic magic of the promenade allows it to work in almost any arrangement. But Ravel's delicately arranged yet stately use of brass has set a benchmark which has been echoed by various other arrangers, and perhaps has even been the inspiration for the full brass arrangement by Elgar Howarth. The conductor-pianist Ashkenazi's own arrangement, which consciously accentuates the Russian origins of the music, also starts with brass. Wonderful, very Russian use of clarinet there, but at that fast tempo, it does feel like Mussorgsky is almost jogging around the gallery. Mussorgsky marked the tempo allegro giusto, lively and measured. Well, maybe he was a very brisk walker. Certainly this arrangement has a stronger march-like feel to it. However, the power of the promenade doesn't make it completely immune to some musical injuries in the course of its many arrangements. German heavy metal supergroup Mekong Delta have made a complete metal recording of pictures at an exhibition. This glossily produced heavy metal sound somehow seems to have lost that original image of someone walking around the gallery enjoying a recently departed friend's artwork. It might appeal to some metal fans, but to me it just feels a little bit brash. Some of the transformations of the promenade take it way beyond the original. Of the slightly more controversial arrangements, we have the Japanese synthesizer maestro Tomita. Considering that his arrangement was done in 1975, the synthesizer sounds he came up with certainly sound ahead of their time. But his insistence on using a kind of synthesized vocal sound can become a little bit grating, though perhaps it seemed quite incredible at the time. Now, the choral effect just there at the end is quite impressive. Tolmita may also have been reacting to the hymn-like quality of the promenade, as Mussorgsky was deeply interested in Russian song and the rhythms of Russian speech. And there are actually a few other examples when other arrangers have decided to bring the human voice into the equation. The first and probably most shocking is in Emerson, Lake and Palmer's live recording, which does have some great moments, but unfortunately Greg Lake decided to sing the promenade theme in its second appearance.
Lead me from tortured dreams, childhood themes of nights alone.
Okay, that's enough. I'm really not quite sure where the lyrics came from either. Another rather surprising use of vocals is in Australian film composer Douglas Gamley's arrangement, in which a large chorus slowly emerges in the final picture, The Great Gates of Kiev, rising out of a big filmic orchestral sound. The use of voices here is perhaps another attempt to introduce some Russianness and a direct human element to the piece. So, moving on to the pictures themselves. Each painting is musically described in such a powerful and colourful way by Mussorgsky. Each painting tells its own story. The Russian art critic Vladimir Starsov originally introduced Mussorgsky to Victor Hartmann, and in fact Mussorgsky dedicated Pictures and Exhibition to Starsov, in memory of our dear Victor. When Pictures was finally published in 1886, Starsov wrote short comments before each picture, giving a little description of the original painting itself, some of which can still be seen today, some of which have unfortunately been lost. So for example, Gnomus, or the gnome, which has since been lost, Starsov describes as a drawing representing a small gnome walking awkwardly on deformed legs. We can't see the drawing, but Mussorgsky has taken this gnome character to a real extreme and made something quite frightening at times, and perhaps even explored the frustrations and anger of this unfortunate creature. Now, to redeem our faith in 70s prog rock a little bit, we'll have a listen to Emerson, Lake and Palmer's arrangement, The Gnome. Even though there's plenty of jazz, rock, drum rolls and electric bass guitar, they certainly do seem to catch the energy and power that is The Gnome. Okay, they do start to go off on a slight elaboration on the original there, but actually throughout much of their version they are impressively true to the original score, and even when they seem to be jamming they are in fact following the harmonic structure of the original. Mussorgsky's nationalistic interest in Russian folk traditions is particularly evident in the accordion version, which is much lighter in feel but still has a real charm. That was arranged by James Crabb and Geir Draugsvoll for classical accordions. Mussorgsky's choice of subjects is quite diverse, and despite his nationalistic intentions, there are several foreign themes in Pictures and Exhibition. Le Marché at Limoges, the catacombs in Paris, and the gardens of the Tuileries. Could this existing French connection within the work be another reason behind the success of Ravel's arrangement? Also, there are two very evocative descriptions involving animals. The first is Bidlo, which is a Polish wagon on enormous wheels drawn by oxen, and this works particularly well for brass, with rumbling percussion suggesting the difficult passage of a cart's wheels through the mud. Elgar Howarth's excellent arrangement for brass ensemble is not dissimilar to Gorchakov's very Russian-sounding version, which has the addition of low strings. It's interesting to note that both these versions follow the original dynamic markings of Mussorgsky, whereas Ravel decided to have this wagon coming from the distance. So instead of starting forte, he starts pianissimo, adding a new descriptive element to the work. One of the quirkiest animals explored in Pictures is the ballet of the unhatched chicks, which in Hartmann's original picture is based on a costume design for ballet dancers, wearing eggs around them. One of my favourite performances of it is the piano original performed by my grandfather, Sergei Prokofiev, who was a big supporter of the work, which was a regular part of his solo piano concert repertoire. And there's an old player piano role that's recently been re-recorded. Sergei plays it with an uncharacteristically generous amount of rubato and freedom with the tempo. He was normally a pianist who was quite strict in that area, but he really brings out the playful bird-like nature of the music. And I can't help wondering whether his own bird theme from Peter and the Wolf was perhaps inspired by this, and also perhaps inspired by Ravel's use of the flute in his orchestration. The pianist does have to work that bit harder and really work on the interpretation to bring it to its full potential. And perhaps that's why so many people have attempted to arrange pictures, because they, through the act of orchestrating, have hoped to bring that extra life to it. Mussorgsky's writing for the piano, full of grace notes, represents the chattering of the little chicks, and in some arrangements, this is taken to a more literal level. That arrangement is by Lucien Caillé, film composer and staff arranger for the Philadelphia Orchestra. Mussorgsky had a fantastic ear for descriptive melody and harmony, and so it is a bit disappointing that many other arrangements fail to really capture this particular picture, as the following montage will show you. Arrangements there for classical guitar, heavy metal band, and church organ, none of them quite having the ability to recreate the original description of Mussorgsky's. But surprisingly successful is this brass arrangement. And of course, with synthesizers, you can often be very descriptive, but this goes one step too far in its synthetic imitation of the literal. Finally, we must give some thought to tonight's concert piece, Ravel's masterful arrangement. So brilliantly orchestrated that for many people, Ravel's version is Pictures at an Exhibition. People are often surprised to hear the piano original. Mussorgsky's gritty Russian harmonies gave Ravel something he wouldn't have come up with himself. Yet Ravel's fantastic ear and subtle touch with orchestration lift them into another world. It's an instance when two great composers have come together incredibly successfully, which is actually something quite rare in the history of classical music. There's always been a strong cultural connection between France and Russia, with composers such as Stravinsky and my grandfather Sergei Prokofiev settling in Paris in the 1920s. Coincidentally, just around the time when Ravel's orchestration was commissioned and premiered by Koussevitzky. Pictures is actually a direct musical connection between these two countries. Yet, some commentators regard Ravel's phenomenal orchestration as too far from the Russian feel of Mussorgsky's original, as too pristine, too perfect, too French. One very clear example of a fashion of the time when Ravel made his arrangement is the use of the saxophone. Ravel was one of the earliest composers to use the instrument within an orchestral classical context. And I even wonder whether Sergei Prokofiev wasn't inspired by this use. It appears in quite similar textures in his own work, Lieutenant Kije. In fact, Ravel is the only composer to use the saxophone in his orchestral arrangement, the old castle theme being replaced very successfully by muted trumpets in Gorchakov's arrangement and oboe and clarinet in Ashkenazi's. In this investigation, we've witnessed the vitality and energy that many different approaches have brought to Mussorgsky's 134-year-old piano work. but I'm not sure that any have quite managed to capture it so completely and satisfyingly as Ravel's orchestration. But I think that the challenge is still open, and there are many more arrangements of pictures that are waiting to be made.
Gabriel Prokofiev ending that consideration of various arrangements of pictures at an exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky.